I wanted us tonight to come back in our series of Abraham, and tonight to look at the story of the death of Sarah. You might wonder, well, why do we want to look at the story of the death of Sarah? Well, it is a part of Abraham's life. Abraham will live another 37 years after Sarah dies, and a lot of things happen in Abraham's life, and I'm sure we only know the tip of the iceberg of things about Abraham, but we do know some things about it, and the story of Sarah's passing is one of the scriptures that kind of remain in this series in Abraham. I really have two more messages that I want to bring from Abraham's life, and we're coming, of course, to the end of that specific study of Abraham, but I did want us to take some time tonight and read the story of Sarah, and whose life we have looked at already and examined at different times and places in this series. We've talked about Sarah's character and Abraham's character and how Sarah dealt with her hurts and her pains and her fears in some way, and how Abraham and how Lot have. We kind of have looked at all these characters in these chapters in the book of Genesis, and we do know that Sarah has been Abraham's wife for a long time. They came together from the land that God called them from. They were married then. They made the long journey together. And everything we know about the days of Abraham pretty much applied to the days of Sarah up until now. They've been together. They've been through it all. They've been through all kinds of experiences. Some of them have been wonderful and marvelous, and some of them have been very painful. And so we learn a lot from them. I've often said that we don't study the Bible in order to put people on a pedestal in the Bible. Jesus is the only one that belongs on a pedestal. Everybody else is just very human, and Abraham is human. And he had some great qualities that are absolutely, absolutely for us to study and understand, particularly his faith. And last week's study about the offering of Isaac is just a story that stands out to me of the marvel of Abraham's faith and how it is that a man could have that kind of faith in God. Well, that was last Sunday, and tonight we want to continue and look at the story of Abraham and Sarah. Of course, have been intertwined. God's favor, God's promises, God's presence, God talking to Abraham about Lot, and the stories of some that we've looked at already. Well, we don't know a lot about Sarah, but we do know that Sarah was with Abraham from the beginning. Also, it's likely that Sarah was even a part of Abraham's childhood and Abraham's life, because we know that Abraham and Sarah were brother and sister. They were half brother and sister, and we know that Sarah was also a daughter of Abraham's father, but not of his mother. And so they grew up together. Maybe not right in the same tent area, but they were family, and they later became married and traveled together and spent, now it's been over 60 years when we come to the death of Sarah that she's been in the Promised Land. It's about 60 years that they spend time together, having arrived in the land that God brought them to, about half of Sarah's life before she dies and recorded in this scripture. Well, before we read the story, I do want to change the subject just for a couple of minutes about something kind of related to this. I want to ask you a question, and I do have a prize for the one that can answer the second question correctly. Now, the first question is just a warm-up, practice. Okay, who knows what the most holy place to the Jews is today? What place would you think is the most revered and holy place to Judaism today? What would you guess? Wailing Wall. Okay, you're warmed up. You're ready to answer the next question. That's right, the Wailing Wall, which is, go to that next slide if you would, the Wailing Wall, which you kind of see straight back in this picture, is the Western Wall, thought to be the Western Wall of the original temple, Herod's temple. And that's the only part of the temple that remains. Everything else, of course, has been demolished, rebuilt, but never the temple. But that wall, that western wall there, where you see, I don't even know, if all you see is little black specks, those are people praying at the Western Wall. That's where Jews, it's the most revered place in Israel today. And anytime you go to the Western Wall, which I went twice, I went with Debbie one time, and then I went with my dad in the evening another time, and there were a lot of people there both times. It was a precious, special place. I put that on my top five of places in Israel that just to be at that Western Wall and see the prayers going on there. I mean, there were people fervently praying. Most of them were Jews, and you can tell they're Jews, but there are a lot of other people, and they invite and welcome anybody to come and pray at the Western Wall. It is a very important place to them, and it's a neat place. And boy, you stand there and you think about being right there. Where you're standing would have been inside the temple, probably, they believe. And that wall would have been the remaining wall. And then the other things have been built since then, added back on, having been destroyed over the centuries at different times by different armies and so forth. But that Western Wall is the original wall and thought to be that original wall of the temple that's there. And so that is very, very special. Well, the second most sacred place for the Jews. Now, I do have a prize for whoever gets that. So, John, you might deserve it. What do you think is the most second most holy place for Jews today? Who has a guess? Huh? Dome of the Rock. Nope. Not that. Good try. Not that. Good try, though. Anybody have an idea? What would be the second most revered place in Judaism today? I want to venture a guess. I'm going to give you a hint, a clue. It's in a town 12 miles south of Jerusalem, in the town of Hebron. That give you any clue? I don't hear anybody really getting excited yet. What's that? Yeah, it's where Abraham is buried. Come up here, would you, Snook? I have 10 shekels for you. 10 shekels, buddy. That'll get you started. Won't get you very far, but, you know. I brought back a lot of money from Israel. I've been putting them in kids' birthday cards now for 3 years. I'm about out, you know. I even got so low on my money from Israel that I had Snook bring me back a bag of bills from Honduras last time he came here. So now I switched over to Honduran money I'm putting in their cards. shekels, yes. In Hebron is a very, very revered place to the Jews. And that is a place where Abraham and Sarah are buried. If you go on to that next slide, they're buried at a place called the cave at Machpelah. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I couldn't seem to find the answer to that. But it was a cave, and it's a place, the first person to be buried there was Sarah. And it became a very, very special place. So now we're going to read that story. Not only was Sarah buried there, but then Abraham was buried there, and then Isaac was buried there, and Rebecca was buried there, and then two more people buried there, Jacob and his first wife, Leah. So there are six of the patriarchs. You look at Abraham and his wife, and Isaac and his wife, and then Jacob and his first wife, and then, of course, that's Abraham's wife of promise, but those are the six that are believed to be buried at the cave of Machpelah. Now, this doesn't look much like a cave, but it is almost a city around this area underneath it, and on top of it, inside is a couple of churches. It's a large area, but underneath are the caves. And of course, no one is allowed there except, I don't know what, when, and whatever they access them, but you can go and visit. And this is, I understand, the second most place also visited by Jews today. They want to be at the place of Abraham's burial. Now, it's not only the Jews, but it's the Muslims. And, you know, the Muslims also revere Father Abraham. And so this is the tomb of someone who is regarded as the father of three faiths, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. So there's a lot of tension here. When I was in Israel, I was not allowed to go there, and I was quite sad about that because that's one of the places I wanted to go, among 500 other. But it's really hard to go to Hebron today because of the tensions with the Palestinians. Hebron is in Palestinian-controlled territory, and you pretty much have to pay a Palestinian tour guide
operator to take you in a car there to Hebron to see this area of Israel today because of the conflict. And I don't know what it is today. That's what it was 3 years ago, but I can only imagine what it would have been, what it is today with all the tensions. I don't even know if Christians from the West can even go to Hebron today. I wonder that. But this is a very sacred place for many people, Jews especially. Okay, going to read from Genesis chapter 23. And I'm going to read the entire chapter. This is the story of the death of Sarah. And we'll start at verse 1. Genesis chapter 23. Sarah lived to be 127 years old. She died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. Then Abraham rose from beside his dead wife and spoke to the Hittites. He said, I am an alien and a stranger among you. Sell me some property for a burial site here so I can bury my dead. The Hittites replied to Abraham, Sir, listen to us. You are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will refuse you his tomb for burying your dead. Then Abraham rose and bowed down before the people of the land, the Hittites. He said to them, If you are willing to let me bury my dead, then listen to me and intercede with Ephron, son of Zohar, on my behalf, so he will sell me the cave of Machpelah, which belongs to him and is at the end of his field. Ask him to sell it to me for the full price as a burial site among you. Ephron the Hittite was sitting among the people, and he replied to Abraham in the hearing of all the Hittites who had come to the gate of the city. No, my lord, he said, listen to me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead. Again, Abraham bowed down before the people of the land, and he said to Ephron in their hearing, listen to me. If you will, I will pay the price of the field. Accept it from me so I can bury my dead there. Ephron answered, Abraham, listen to me, my lord. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver, but what is that between me and you? Bury your dead. Abraham agreed to Ephron's terms and weighed out for him the price he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weight current among the merchants. So Ephron's field in Machpelah near Mamre, both the field and the cave in it, and all the trees within the borders of the field were deeded to Abraham as his property in the presence of all the Hittites who had come to the gate of the city. Afterward, Abraham buried his wife Sarah in the cave in the field of Machpelah near Mamre, which is at Hebron in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave in it were deeded to Abraham by the Hittites as a burial site. Well, we know several things about Sarah and where she was at. We know that Sarah was at 127 years old, verse 1 tells us. Sarah, 127, at this time when she dies, Abraham is 10 years older, so Abraham's 137 years old. As I said, they probably grew up together. They probably grew up knowing each other, and Abraham would have been 10 years older, and somewhere along the way, it was decided that she would become his wife, which, of course, according to biblical history, was quite common and is common throughout the patriarchal stories, and really up until you come to the law of Moses. There's a lot of things about families and marriages that are not a part of our culture and our customs, and we might not understand, but we know that Abraham was 10 years older than Sarah, and Sarah died when she was 127. We also know that Sarah had been a mother for 37 years. Isaac was born 37 years before this when she was at the age of 90. And so Sarah did live into the adulthood of her son Isaac and was there to enjoy the blessing of the promised son that God had given to them. Jewish history is also pretty clear about recording the dates of the patriarchs and when they died. And according to Jewish history, I mean, it just seems like I looked at five different commentaries and they all said the same thing. It had to be about 4,000 years ago, about 1860 BC, that Sarah would have died. They trace, Jewish history does, basically every generation, and they have an answer at least for exactly what years people, patriarchs, were born and how long they lived and how long they died. But it was about 4,000 years ago that Sarah would have died. it's just interesting to me that Sarah is the only woman in the Bible that I can think of whose age and death and burial is recorded. We have the news of the death of other women in the Bible, but Sarah is the only one where time is taken and in the Scriptures is found information about her burial. And they think, well, why is that important? Why is that significant? Well, it tells me how important Sarah was in the story. We've talked a lot about Abraham, but Sarah was also very important in the story. And Moses, as he compiled the book of Genesis, must have found that it was important and believed that God wanted him to include in the information of the patriarchs the specific information about Sarah as well. Sarah really is important to Jewish theology, and her place is important. We know the place, of course, that Sarah died. In this verse, it's called Kiriath Arba, which is another name for Hebron. You might wonder, well, what's Kiriath Arba have to do with Hebron? Well, Arba was the name of the father of Anak, and it was Arba's descendants that became the Anakite people, if I have that right. And so, you know, the names that we find in the Bible, we don't know what they mean oftentimes, but if you can trace back their, you know, where they come from, they usually come back to the beginning of a tribe. And that name then later was called and translated into Hebron. And so that becomes a city which is about 12 miles south of Jerusalem. So it's not far when you think of the distance. You have Jerusalem, and about 6 miles south Bethlehem, and another 8 miles south is Hebron. And that was a very important and significant place for Abraham and his wife. And so Abraham, it says here in verse 2, Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. It's not a lot of information about the grief of Abraham. It's basically one verse. But it does tell us and show us how important it was and how important Sarah was to Abraham, that he mourned and he wept and he grieved for her. It would seem from the context that Abraham may have been away when Sarah died. And I say that because it says, and Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. It sounds like if he had to go a distance, then probably he was away. Now, he could have just been in another tent or somewhere in the area, but it's likely, of course, Abraham, as you know, is a nomad. He spent his whole life wandering and taking care of his animals and moving them from area to area. Sometimes his encampment would stay where it was, but the herdsmen and Abraham may have to go with to more fertile ground for their animals to feed. And so they were always moving, constantly moving. We also know in a prior chapter that Abraham stayed and lived in a place called Beersheba. Beersheba is 40 miles from Hebron. So it could be that Abraham had some of his flock, some of his family, some of his herds, who knows how much, may have been in the area of Hebron, but also he had some of his wealth and down further south, 40 miles south in a place called Beersheba. But it says in verse 2 that he went to mourn for Sarah. He mourned and he wept. Mourning, I think, of being the internal sense of sadness and sorrow and loss. Mourning, I think, of being the emotional dealing with loss. And Abraham, this great patriarch Abraham, gives us a short picture, a small picture of the mourning that he felt for someone that he had lived with and been married to and gave birth to the promised son. And to weep over her, Abraham wept. I think of the Scriptures where we find weeping, and of course we think of two places. Jesus wept. And weeping is a part of who we are when we have great loss. And in this story, we hear a little bit and see a little bit about the mourning of Abraham. And then verse 2 says he went to mourn for Sarah. He mourned and he wept, showing great affection for her. I don't know how long of a time that was, but then at whatever time it was, it says that Abraham in verse 3 rose from his dead wife and spoke to the Hittites. After a time of mourning, Abraham got up. And what we have in the rest of the chapter, pretty much from now on, is Abraham taking care of having a place for Sarah to be buried. From verse 3 to the end of the chapter is really about the story of how he acquired the cave at Machpelah and the negotiation that took place. One thing that seems interesting about this story is, you know, we've heard about the promises of God for Abraham now for, he's heard about the promises of God for a long time, for 40, 50, 60 years. Exactly how old Abraham was when he first heard the promise, we're not sure. But we know that at least for the last 60 years, Abraham has had the promise of God of descendants, innumerable stars in the sky. But he's also had the promise of God of the land. God said, you remember, he told him to look out to the north and to the west and the east and the south. And he said, Abraham, this land's going to belong to you and your descendants. But yet by this time in Abraham's life, he doesn't yet own a piece of land in Israel. He's a nomad. He's moving back and forth. He has cattle and sheep and donkeys and men servants and maid servants, but he owns no land. And so here Abraham is at the age of 137, and he is now negotiating to purchase the very first piece, the very first acre of land that will belong to him in the promised land. When I think about that, I think about God's promise, how God made a promise to Abraham, but God didn't tell Abraham when it was all to be fulfilled. He said, your descendants will live in this land. And of course, later on talks about how 350 years later the descendants will come back to the land. But here's Abraham, 137 years, and he has not yet partaken of the promise of the land. He lives in it, but he doesn't own it. He doesn't possess it. Now I want to read from Acts chapter 7. You might think, well, what in the world does Acts chapter 7 have to do with Abraham? Well, Stephen in Acts chapter 7 talks about Abraham as he begins to explain to the Sanhedrin about Christ. So way back there, Stephen pulls out this story. You think, wow, that's an interesting place. But he talks about this story and about the promise of the land for Abraham. Acts chapter 7 starts this. Then the high priest asked him, are these charges true? To this he replied, brothers and fathers, listen to me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham while he was still in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran. Leave your country and your people, God said, and go to the land I will show you. So he left the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. After the death of his father, God sent him to this land where you are now living. He gave him no inheritance here, not even a foot of ground. But God promised him that he and his descendants after him would possess the land, even though at the time Abraham had no child. Interesting that Stephen noticed that. He had not even been given a foot of land, but God had promised it to his descendants. And so we see what was a promise for Abraham was a promise of what God was going to do for his future and for his family that would follow after him. That's why Isaac is so important. That's why the child of promise was so important. Abraham knew, he understood more than we do, that God was making a promise about the future. And this story of him purchasing land to bury his wife is the only story we know of Abraham where he owns any land to bury his wife. Up until this point, Abraham has been a wanderer. He has lived in several places that we've called the names of or spoken the names of. He's a stranger. He calls himself a stranger. He calls himself an alien. And though God promises him the land, it won't be fulfilled. The promise won't be fulfilled. And that just tells me that sometimes we don't know the timing of God's promises, but he will keep them in his own timing. He had been in this area for a long time, but yet it appears that he doesn't own any land himself. And so it was important for him to begin to have a place that would be his own, a place for a proper burial for Sarah. And so the rest of the chapter describes this purchase of land. I call it a negotiation for the field and the cave that we spoke of. The negotiating takes place between Abraham and the leaders of the Hittite tribe. Those are the people that occupied that area where Abraham, the Hebron. And so
the story begins with Abraham negotiating with the leaders, and then it kind of changes into Abraham negotiating directly with the owner of the field. And when you read the story, it seems like a very pleasant story, kind of a polite conversation. The exchanges are very respectful. There's no demands made. It's almost like when you read the story, it just seems like they're all trying to be very much gentlemen in the process and the story. There's obviously some cultural things here that are not normal to us, but they took place in negotiations in Abraham's day. You have compliments. I mean, the one that really comes out to me is, "You're a great prince, Abraham." Now, that might have been very sincere. It may well have been. There's a couple ways to look at this negotiation, and people who study this kind of are on two sides. One is that the Hittites were being very, very respectful to Abraham, and they were saying, "Abraham, you are a great man, and you're blessed by God. You just can have anything you want to." And that may be the way it was. But also there's the element of the money and the purchase price. And how do we get to a fair settlement for this? But it all takes place in a positive, flattery almost. A request is made. For example, let me just read verse 5. The Hittites replied to Abraham, "Sir, listen to us. You are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will refuse you his tomb for burying your dead." I mean, that does sound very nice. And if you take it at face value, they were being very giving to Abraham. They recognized this great man. They recognized that God has blessed him unbelievably. They may have recognized his power. I mean, he may have had military might in that he has all these servants. And we know that they rescued Lot once before. But you have them responding to Abraham, "Mighty prince, nothing but the best for you. Any field you want will be yours, Abraham." That's what they tell him. So Abraham says, "Well, this is what I really would like. I'd like that cave at Machpelah." So in verse 9, "He will sell me the cave at Machpelah, which belongs to him and is at the end of his field. Ask him to sell it to me for the full price as a burial site among you." The first reaction of the Hittite seems to be, "Abraham, you just go and take anything you want to. It's yours." And Abraham comes back and says, "Well, that's what I want, but I want to pay for it. I want to pay you the fair and full price." Ephron, who's identified as the owner of that cave in that field, responds, it says in verse 11, "In the hearing of all the Hittites, Ephron the Hittite was sitting among his people, and he replied to Abraham, in the hearing of all the Hittites." It's like, here's Abraham and here's Ephron, and there's a big audience. They're all watching. What's going to happen? How's it going to go? Is Abraham going to be happy? Is he going to be treated fairly? Is he going to treat fairly? Yeah, that's kind of how I see this. They're all watching to see what happens, at least at this time. And so Abraham asked for it, and Ephron responds. It seems like he responds in a very kind and generous way. It certainly does on the surface. "Listen to me. I give you the field and I give you the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead." At this point, Ephron pretty much says, "Abraham, if you want the cave, I'll give you not only the cave, but I'll give you the field too." The issue might be that there was the cave and the field, because at first, Abraham just wants the cave, but then Ephron says, "Well, you know, the cave and the field are attached, and you can have both of them." And, you know, most commentators think the way that they negotiated then was, you know, by this pleasantry. But what Ephron was getting at is, "Yes, Abraham, I'll sell it to you, but I want you to buy the whole thing. I want you to buy the field and the cave, but you can have it," you know. It almost seems like a little bit like double speak. You say one thing, but you really mean a little bit different than that. You know what that's like? You know somebody's telling you something, but you know they're kind of thinking something else a little more than that, and you might guess as to what it is. I've joked with somebody here about how, you know, don't beat around the bush. Just tell me what you're thinking. It's so much easier for me because I don't read minds very well. But in this story, it's like Abraham and Ephron are kind of almost dancing around. Ephron is especially, "Oh, just take it. It's yours. Oh, you want the field too? Well, if you really want it, okay, you can take it. Then verse 12 says, again, Abraham bowed down before the people of the land. Abraham is showing full respect. He bows down before them. And he said to Ephron, in their hearing, listen to me. If you will, I will pay the price for the field. Accept it for me so I can bury my dead there. They start off talking about the cave, but now it's gone to the field. And Abraham says, okay, you want me to buy both the cave and the field? I'll buy the field also. And so the deal is done. And so Ephron responds, well, all right. Listen to me, my lord. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver, but what is that between me and you? Bury your dead. Again, Ephron sounds very, very giving. It would seem like anyway, unless it's something maybe behind that picture we don't see, but he says, okay, you want the field? I'll tell you what, it's worth 400 shekels of silver. You might think, well, was that a lot of money? The answer is no. That wasn't an exorbitant amount of money. It actually seems to be a pretty fair amount in their money system of the day. And so the deal is done. All the Hittites have witnessed the sale, and they've negotiated in the kind of in the culture of the day. And it does seem like both Abraham and Ephron have been generous in this. This seems to generate no problems, no issues between Abraham and his descendants. They have seen it as a very fair thing. Maybe it was an honor for them to have this great man, this great prince's wife buried there, and then later for him himself to be buried there. Ephron was being generous. Well, what we do know also is that Abraham wanted to pay for it. And that kind of, when I get to the end of this particular chapter, what do I think about it? What kind of comes to mind? One is, Abraham wanted to pay for this field. He didn't want it to be donated to him. I mean, he was pretty powerful. He was wealthy. He probably had plenty of money. It wasn't that he was working, but he did not want to accept just on their generosity. He wanted to say, no, I want to pay for this. I want to buy this. I want to give something for it. I think of how important it is in that lesson and that idea of how important it is to understand generosity, but also that we don't take advantage of people. I have the feeling that this is a little bit of Abraham's character coming out. And he's saying, I'm not going to take advantage of you. Yeah, you might give it to me. Maybe. I'm not sure about that. But Abraham wanted to pay for it. And he wanted to pay whatever it's worth. Whatever it is. He keeps saying to the Hittites, whatever it's worth, whatever you want, I will pay for it. But maybe both of them wanted to be generous in this story. Abraham did not want to take advantage of Ephron's personality or generosity. That seems to be pretty clear here. And it seems to have been a pretty fair, respectful, and reasonable transaction. Well, what do we take home from this story? Is there got anything practical in here? Well, what comes to my mind is the integrity of Abraham in this story. Again, he's not taking advantage of someone who's being generous. He's saying, I need to pay for it. I want to pay for it. But also, the idea of integrity, Abraham's not fighting to the last shilling here or the last shekel, if you would. It may be a story for us to think about honesty and think about an example of a fair exchange. I know that early in my life, I would fight for every dime I could possibly get. When I would mow grass for people, you know, I would set my price, you know, and somebody said they were going to give me something, I would receive it very easily. If I was negotiating for a car when I was a teenager, whatever price they said, I'd say, well, can you take 100 less, you know? And that kind of has carried on to my personality through my adulthood. And I have to say that I do remember reading this story a long time ago. I don't know exactly when. I think I was a pastor. And I can just remember my personality had been what you might classify. I was always getting every dime I could out of people. You know, if somebody said, well, I can give you this much, I say, well, you got to give me $10 more. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying it's wrong to negotiate, but I see in this story a reminder about integrity and honesty, and the workman is worthy of his hire. I believe that so strongly. And Christians in business dealings, I just think it's so important to remember our witness
when we're dealing with finances with other people, how easily we can maybe become so demanding of our rights and what we think we're entitled to or we can get out of somebody, and we can leave a bad taste in other people's minds and spirits about our integrity, about our honesty. And you think, well, what in this story speaks to me? This would be that part of it, a reminder of the importance of integrity in our business dealings. And when I go to buy a car today, I don't do it quite like I did before. I told a story to Brad Walter a while back of when I was a new pastor. This is something that really caused me to think. I was buying a car. It was an old car. It wasn't worth much. And the guy wanted $700 for it. I don't remember what kind it was, but it was a really good deal. And he was being very generous to me, but I remember saying to him, well, would you take $650? And I remember what he said to me. He said, Pastor, that's all you could afford. He wasn't in my church. He was in the community. Pastor, if that's all you can afford, then I'll sell it for $650. And I could see all over his face what he thought and he felt. And that kind of went into my heart about integrity and how we can be careless about how we treat this area of greed, if you call it greed, or how you know, we ought to be careful. The tendency is to protect and to want to take care of things, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there's a caution in this story about how we see the possessions that God gives us and to be careful that we come across with integrity. Abraham strikes me in this story as someone who comes across in that way, and I like that about this story. There's two more things that I want to talk about with Abraham. One of them is Abraham's death, and probably more important than that, some things about Abraham's family that are found in these two chapters, the next couple of chapters. And so next Sunday I plan to go to that. We're actually going to back up to the last few verses of the prior chapter, and we're going to talk about Abraham's family, his brothers, and how the whole Abraham's family all come together as patriarchs. I put this on the screen. I know you can't read it from there, but I've been studying this thing for a few days, and I'm going to talk about next week, not in this form, but how it is that the patriarchs all pretty much came from the same family way back in Ur of the Chaldees. We kind of think Abraham came, well, he got married to Sarah somewhere, then he had a son, Isaac, and he got married to somebody. But they all come from a tribe that God had chosen. And that's interesting when we think about why. Why did God choose Abraham's family? But he did. For three generations, Abraham and Sarah, and then Isaac and Rebekah, who actually is a niece of Abraham. And then you have Jacob and Leah and Rachel, who are great nieces of Abraham. So I want to just talk a little bit about that family as we move to the end of Abraham and then his death and his passing, and we'll pick up from there next week.